and welcome to today's episode of Rainer on Leadership, your online home for leadership lessons and advice for the local church. I'm your host, Jonathan Howe, and as always, I'm joined by Tom Rainer, the president and CEO of Church Answers.
When we get into episode 472, which just wears me out at the thought of the fact that we're getting closer to 500 on Rainer on Leadership, when we get to episode 472, six reasons why churches continue to get immature Christians in leadership positions, I'm going to give you a little bit of background of where I came up with this information, why I came up with this information, and how I came up with this information. I think that'll help give you a little more of the context before we actually get into the points itself. So as we are beginning, I want to thank Vanderblum Search Group for their sponsorship, their support, and their ministry partnership as our longest ongoing sponsor at Rainer on Leadership, and indeed at all of the Church Answers Rainer on Leadership ministries.
Yeah, and hopefully they will help you not put immature Christians in leadership positions, because they are the premier pastor search firm dedicated to helping churches and ministries build great teams. They've helped thousands of churches just like yours find their church staff and are uniquely geared to help you discern who God is calling to lead your church. Find out more about Vanderblum and Search Group by visiting westaffthechurch.com.
Okay, as we're recording this, I know the listener could care less. It's 1:30 in the afternoon.
It's 128 degrees outside.
That's the clock, not the thermostat. Golly. But I think that's wrong. This one says 131, okay. So that's the iPhone. It should be right. We're talking about how I got this information. And from 11 o'clock to about 12:10, 12:15, I was on the phone with one of the guys that we coach. This was one of the things that he was talking about, how some of his leaders, how did they get in this position?
Yeah, who put them in this spot?
He inherited them.
Obviously, yeah.
He inherited them. And the classic question in coaching was, what do I do with them? Yeah, pray Ananias and Sapphira. I don't know what you do with them. But we were talking through some of those issues. The point is, I get a lot of feedback at Church Answers, the blog, the podcast, on people in positions of leadership where church leaders, pastors, are saying, how in the world did they ever get to that position? And basically, what they're doing is framing this entire podcast for us is how this happened. Six reasons why churches continue to get immature Christians in leadership positions.
The first one is that the noisy get rewarded. This is the squeaky wheel gets the grease, right?
Yeah. When we get to number three, and I'm not going to jump ahead a little myself, Jonathan, but when we get to number three, I'll talk about that for just a moment. But I can go back in my own pastoral ministry. Now, I realize I'm taking a pilgrimage back into antiquity when I talk about my own pastoral ministry, but I can say that this is being confirmed again and again by churches and pastors that we deal with on a regular basis. I can say that there are a number of times when someone is not necessarily making an overt campaign for the position, but they're outspoken, they're opinionated. You can really count on them in the negative sense of the word when there's a church business or church conference to have an opinion. You really know that they're going to be speaking up. And the very fact that they're talking a lot, that they have an opinion a lot, that sometimes they can even be on the ornery side, there's this natural inclination, not supernatural, but this natural inclination is, well, there's Joe. You know, he seems really passionate about this. Maybe we ought to put him in this. Or like in churches that nominate deacons, for example, and vote on them by the congregation. Sometimes it's a plurality vote, and someone that's really loud and has a few followers can make it to the diaconate just by those few followers, just because he's loud and he gets rewarded for his loudness. So again and again and again, we see a lot of immature Christians in leadership positions just because they're noisy Christians, and we're not taking time to discern whether that noise is leadership voice or is it immaturity. And some of the cases, it's just outright immaturity. So one of the main reasons that churches continue to get immature Christians in leadership position is the old squeaky wheel. That's the metaphor we use, but the noisy are getting rewarded.
All right, the second one is something we've talked a lot about, really, here at TomRainer.com and Rainer on Leadership, and the bullies get rewarded. So it's not just the ones that really want it, but it's the ones who just bully their way to it.
Bully their way to it and bully others in the process.
And if you try to take it, they bully you away to
And that's a good point. People don't want to fight it.
Yeah.
just let him have the position. I mean, it's not worth the fight. No, don't let him have the position. It is worth the the resistance. Let's just put it that way. It's worth the resistance of putting that person in that position. Sometimes we get a bit Machiavellian. I think I was corrected on that by someone that it's really, really not Machiavellian. It's really something else. But most people refer to it as Machiavellian, which is to keep your friends close to you and keep your enemies even closer. And so sometimes we say, look, if we don't let this bully into this position, he's just going to cause more trouble for us outside the loop. It's better to see what he's up to and to see what he's doing. Well, that's not a very smart way to bring people into positions of spiritual leadership and to church leadership just because they're big bullies that are picking on the pastor and picking on some church members and picking on some staff people to get let them get rewarded. But how many times? I'm thinking of a church right now, and I was in conversation with the pastor. This particular guy is a classic bully. I mean, he's a bully to the pastor. He has his close, real small group of followers. I found out that he was in a leadership position in this church. I'm not going to say the leadership position because I'll probably be saying too much at this point. And I said, how did that happen? He said, well, basically he just elbowed his way. That was a metaphor. And fought people for it, and he ended up getting it. So we got these first two issues. We got these first two blatant issues where the noisy are getting rewarded and then the bullies are getting rewarded. And by the way, those two are not mutually exclusive. Now, here's something else you'll often discover. Let's forget the bullies. Let's just go to the noisy. There are times when people are talking a lot and they have opinions and insights, and it may be in a calm demeanor, and they say, let's just think about this for a minute. They have consistent opinions. They are perceived to be leaders. But the reality of it is, just like someone who continuously trolls on a blog, they may just be people who like to hear themselves. Mm. So either one of these two are major reasons why churches continue to get immature Christians in leadership positions. Be very careful.
All right. Number three is one that you got to be a little delicate with, but it's important because it's a sign of a mature Christian. It could be a sign of a mature Christian. I know pretty immature Christians who give a lot, but no one checks the giving records.
All right. This is where we might spend a little time. We'll be talking about this more in detail later,
yeah,
by the way. I'm going to ask you a question. I'm going to ask you a series of questions.
Okay.
Do you think it's okay for the pastor to just check on people and make sure they're reading their Bible? Hey, you in the Word lately? Is that okay?
I think there's nothing wrong with that.
Okay.
I was trying to think of how, but yeah, if you're just going to, you know, hey, yeah, where you been studying? Nothing wrong with that.
How's your prayer life?
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that. How's your family life without even getting to detail?
Yeah. Been good seeing you in worship lately?
Yeah. Well, those are all acts of spiritual discipline.
Yep.
So is giving.
Oh.
Why do we isolate that as a no see? Why do we do that? Why?
We're scared.
Well, I watched your body language, and the listener obviously could not see it, but I watched your body language saying, you know, I got to be real careful here. I get that. But why are we being careful? Why is it such a touchy issue that we don't want leaders to see our giving? Let me tell you what's going on, Jonathan. And I'm going to unpack this later. And I know that there are people who are going to have significant disagreements with me, and that's okay. But here is what's going on. I'm going to ask you a question. You have one or two answers.
Oh boy.
If you get it wrong, I'll tell you it's the other answer. Okay. Is total charitable giving over the last 20 years up or down?
I'm going to guess it's up.
It is. Okay, you got that one.
I know mine's up.
Okay, well, that's good.
My earning potential has gone up drastically over the last 20 years, considering I was like in high school 20 years ago.
Okay, there you go. But again, ages tend to balance out, so
you can't use yourself as a
But the answer is correct. Total charitable giving is up.
Charitable giving is up.
Yeah.
Church giving
is down. That was the second question. Why?
I saw where you're going with that.
Why?
Because people are less committed to giving to church. Well, they're less committed to showing up at church. And then,
but Jonathan,
also, well, they don't commitment means lower giving.
But
we know that. We've talked about that on podcasts before.
Yeah.
And then also, people outside of the church have done a better job of asking for money.
Why? Because they can look and see who's given and thank them, and they can see potential of people. Hey, Mr. Donor to the
Revitalized network.
No. To the athletic department, to the football team. Yeah.
To Alabama.
Okay. You gave $50,000 last year. I want to challenge you.
You did?
No. I want to.
No.
I want to challenge you to give $75,000 this year.
Oh.
Now, they do that.
They do.
And
you know what? If you do that, we'll invite you to this special dinner with the coach.
Whatever. All he's going to say is, quit asking me who his quarterback's going to be. I'm tired of that.
Going to those because you're taller than he is.
I don't like going to those because I just don't like going to those even when he's there. So here's my point. 501c3s, charitable organizations that aren't churches, look at the records. They take advantage of it, usually in a very positive way. And this is a true story.
I wouldn't expect you to tell me an untrue story.
Well, I want to give you the source of it. So while I'm doing this, I'll be looking up for the source of it because it's a really, really good book. And it has a lot of this information that I'm talking about here. The story goes, and I may have the numbers off a little bit. This pastor was in a church, was in a building program or something like that. It was the usual, or maybe it wasn't even a building program. It doesn't matter. But it was the usual church situation where, okay, we need y'all to give, everybody give, you know, the usual church type of thing. And someone said, you need to go talk to Miss Bessie. I don't remember her name. I said, why? Well, Miss Bessie's husband died 3 years ago, and he left her an enormous estate that's in some type of trust. And it's millions and millions and millions of dollars. And she still lives in her same old house. She hardly spends any money. And she said her main complaint is she doesn't like to pay taxes. She'd rather give the money away than pay taxes.
Amen, sister.
And so the pastor, at the push of the friend, with hesitation, went to Miss Bessie. And again, my story may be a little bit off. He said, Miss Bessie, this is kind of uncomfortable, but I heard that your husband left you all this money. And I just wondered, would you be willing to give some of that to the church? She said, honey, I'd love to, but I've already given it away. She said, I gave it away 2 years ago. She said, almost all of it's gone. Well, who'd you give it to? To the art department at the local university.
Because they asked.
They asked, and they gave me a vision for it. The president came into my house and just asked for it.
Wow.
And he said, you ain't got nothing left? No. The book is Not Your Parents' Offering Plate by J. Cliff Christopher.
Not Your Parents' Offering Plate.
Yeah, really, really a very good book. Huh. So we'll put that in the resources.
Check that out.
Yeah, it's worth reading in a lot of ways. It's not your typical church finance book. So no one is
actually worth reading.
Well, that and some books by Art Rainer.
Oh, so, yeah, that's true.
So no one is checking the giving record. So I've given the story many times about the guy who headed up finance.
Yeah, at one finance of chairman.
Gave zero.
And he's on the finance. He's chairman of the finance.
He had more financial control than anyone in the church. And it went to the financial secretary, just couldn't hold back anymore. I just got to tell you about him. What? Oh, he's not giving anything. I have put my fingers in my ears, go, like that, because I'm not supposed to hear that. But boy. So, I had to turn that over to some lay leadership mm-hmm. to try to handle that.
What if you had just wrote handwritten notes? Basically, you didn't know what they were giving. You just said, hey, give me the top 50 givers mm-hmm. in the church. That's a big church, obviously. But if it's a small church, maybe it's top 15. And you just wrote handwritten notes. Thank you for your generosity. Don't put anything like you don't know what they gave. You just know that they're the top people. And you're writing handwritten notes to those folks once a quarter.
It would be good if you don't get a lot of flack for it.
Yeah.
If you just don't get a lot of flack for it. Here's what one pastor told me that he does. He does not write the thank you notes to the givers because he just is not allowed to know. I don't even know if he wants to know. But he does get reports of, I think he asked for the top 25 givers mm-hmm. by age, so he can see if it's going to be a problem
pretty
soon, and how much is distributed by different groups. And you know, is there any one or two or three families that we're overly dependent upon? But he has no more visibility. Mm-hmm. And this particular exercise was absolutely amazing. Top 25 givers were, you could have lost five of them, six of them, and you would have been fine. I mean, they were so well distributed. Mm. There weren't any big givers. Yeah. But
we've talked to pastors, though, who lost two givers.
And it's like half or 60% of the budget.
Yeah. And they didn't lose them for like bad reasons. I think they just moved, they relocated.
It's relocation.
And you can't do anything about that as a pastor.
In fact, one of them, I think, continued to give for a year.
Backed it down slowly.
Yeah. He said, I'm going to ratchet this down.
Because he knew how much of the impact it was making.
But going back to our point, we got to get back on script here. Right. No one checks the giving records, and so you don't. Giving is one sign of spiritual discipline. Would you put someone in a leadership position who does not attend ever?
No.
Well, then why would you put someone in a leadership position who does not give?
I wouldn't.
Okay. But you don't know unless you know how much they're giving.
Exactly.
And you can always ask that question of the financial secretary or whoever, but we'll move on.
Yes.
We're going to talk more about this
one. All right. All right. Yeah. We little soapbox there.
Yes.
Which we tend to do on when it comes to money and giving in churches.
Yes. All
right, number four, some try to use the church for power they don't have outside the church. So they it's their little fiefdom.
Yep. They feel like they're not empowered in the job where they work or whatever they do. And so they use the church as their power play. And recognize that when it's taking place. Recognize that some people don't want to serve. They want to be served. And that's why they get into these powerful positions. They're there for the recognition. And by powerful, I mean they may control key ministries. They may control financial issues. They may control personnel issues. And, you know, Jonathan, we hear this a lot. When those people end up on a personnel committee or some similar body,
oh, it's trouble.
It's always trouble because they start trying to control the pastor and the other staff, and many times they don't have a clue on what they're doing. So,
well, sometimes you get people on those type of situations that have a lot of power outside of the church and expect to still have it inside the church.
That's true.
So you have that too. I mean, it's not just they don't have anything, but sometimes it's the high-powered businessman or whatever. He expects to be able to come in and run the church just like he does his own business where – you know, he's the president and CEO or something. Not that you would do that. I'm just...
Well, my pastor told me I would never have a leadership position in his church.
Really?
Yep.
Jess?
Jess.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, because he's your dad. Or wait, you're his dad.
I'm his dad. And then he was very clear.
That's glad to, good thing.
Glad to have you here. But you won't be an elder. You won't be in a key leadership position. And I said, okay.
You got no problem with that.
No, I don't have any problem with that. One more meeting to go to.
All right. And then next one, the church is a low expectation church. So if you don't have expectations or you have low expectations of people, then don't be surprised when you get what you asked for, basically.
Yeah. And I think that when we go back to that book, and At Your Parents' Offering Plate, mm-hmm. the author talks a lot about that low expectation churches are the low giving churches, but the low expectation churches are also the ones that don't get people in places of ministry. When someone goes through a new members class, they should be on board. They should be on board, at least conceptually, to give to the church, to attend to the church, to be in a community group, and to be in a place of ministry. And so that's a high expectation church. And if they're not in that mindset, look, don't try to recruit someone in a low expectation church after they've been in the church a while. Bring them in with expectations on the front end instead of trying to recruit them in a low expectation church on the back end. And so we're getting a lot of these immature Christians just because we're desperate to find people and we're not expecting it of them on the front end.
All right. Finally, leadership is not rotated. If you just keep having the same people and maybe just swapping chairs in different leadership roles, nothing's ever going to change.
I am a advocate of fresh leadership, and that's always relative. One of the top three reasons that I announced my retirement was the sense that you always need fresh eyes. You always need someone to come in after a while. You know, it was 13 years, the right time. Should it have been 10? Should it have been 15? You know, you can argue those one way or another. But I do know this, you can become stale in leadership, and it can happen in churches. And the opposite of that, you can not only become stale, the opposite is you can become too empowered and you become a blockage to ministry and things taking place in the church. So rotating leadership sometimes gets people out of those powerful positions, those immature Christians out of powerful positions in a natural way rather than a forced way. These, Jonathan, came from mainly Church Answers.
Yeah.
Answering questions at churchanswers.com and listen to pastors and other leaders ask questions or make comments about immature Christians that they're having to deal with in leadership positions in the church. Better to get it on the front end than, or as Barney would say, nip it in the bud.
In the bud.
Yeah.
That's right. You know, another way that you can maybe help people not be immature Christians?
Good training.
Yeah. Train them. Send them to Midwestern and their MDiv program. It's an 81-hour program and gives you a full, complete foundation for full-time ministry leaders, giving you everything you need, nothing you don't. You can join other students in vibrant Kansas City, Missouri, and train in a unique collaborative environment focused on a local church, or study online in your current ministry context. Midwestern Seminary is developing a discipleship culture devoted to the local church and committed to God's unchanging word. You can start your training today at mbts.edu/MDIV. That's going to do it for today's episode of Rainer on Leadership. Any final closing thoughts, Dr. Rainer?
Well, the book that I mentioned, I want to mention that one more time, Not Your Parents' Offering Plate by J. Cliff Christopher. It's an older book. It was revised, I think, in 2015, 2016, but it even is older than that. But it is one of the best books that I have seen on giving or read on giving in the church. I actually had a conference call with one of our Church Answers guys. Traveling back, got stuck in downtown Atlanta. Thank you very much.
You did?
I did for 2.5 hours. I moved about.
It's like the old times. You used to work there, didn't you?
I did. This was right on the hospital curve near Grady Memorial Hospital. 4 lanes going one way, except only one of them was open.
That is
at rush hour.
Recipe for disaster.
At rush hour.
That could be anywhere. 4 to 1.
Yes.
Not a good thing.
So it just so happened that I had a long conference call with this Church Answers pastor. I told him to read this book ahead of time, because he had some giving issues. And he said that was one of the most eye-opening books he's ever read in ministry, period. So don't know J. Cliff Christopher, but I sure am high on him.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks again for joining us today here on Rainer on Leadership. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, or in your favorite podcasting app. And join us online at TomRainer.com, where we're growing healthy churches together.